This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The issue of the planned protest, Mr. President does not see any need for that. He's asked them to shove that plan. He's asked them to await government response to all their pleas. He has listened to them, so there's no need for strike.
That was Nigeria's Minister for Information and National Orientation, Muhammad Idris, speaking for the president about the planned nationwide protests on Thursday. Details coming up. Also, two activists in Guinea have been missing for more than 2 weeks, and Chad is seeking urgent help to save more than 2 million people caught in a severe humanitarian crisis. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. In Guinea-Conakry, two activists have been missing since they were allegedly snatched and tortured by security forces more than 2 weeks ago, and a third was taken away from his house yesterday. Meanwhile, the military junta has deployed police and other security forces in strategic areas of Conakry ahead of today's planned demonstration organized by political and social groups to denounce what they claim is bad governance in Guinea. Reporter Karim Kamara has more from Conakry.
Umaru Sila, also known as Foni Kemenge, and Mamadou Bilo Ba, both members of the civil society group National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, or FNDC, went missing with Abdoulaye Cissé, who says he too was arrested but later released. He accuses members of the special forces of torturing all three men. Cissé says the gendarmes were used to force them out of the house, but the operations were directed by special forces. He says the soldiers accused them of trying to incite citizens against the regime. He says soldiers began slapping their faces repeatedly and threatened to rip out their teeth while demanding names of their financial supporters. The accusations have been disputed by government spokesman Usman Gawal Jallo, who criticizes the accusations as defamation to discredit government officials. Despite families, the UN and rights groups calling for the release of the two men, their whereabouts remain unknown. A lawyer of the three, Salifu Biavogi, says the men were kidnapped and has called for their release. Biavogi says families and friends are beginning to worry because they do not know the motive of their arrest or their whereabouts. The state prosecutor says he was not aware of their arrest and there is no indication they are being held in prison. The wives of the two activists, through their lawyers in France, have filed a complaint in a French court against three key members of the ruling military junta, claiming they were responsible for their disappearance. Earlier today, another opposition leader, Francois Haba, was kidnapped in his house, according to his wife. The Guinean Bar Association says it will continue to boycott all court sessions until the men are found and freed. For VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
The violence that plagued Kenya's economic protests has Nigerians worried as it faces demonstrations Thursday to demand better official action towards alleviating hunger and economic hardship. The government has even ordered security at the borders to be tightened. Our reporter in Abuja, Nigeria, has more on the planned protest.
The planned protest tagged "End Bad Governance in Nigeria" has been generating controversy across the country, making it the leading topic of political and security discussions. President Bola Tinubu had earlier pleaded with the organizers to give him more time and shelve the demonstrations. He spoke through the Minister for Information and National Orientation, Muhammad Idris.
The issue of the planned protest, Mr. President does not see any need for that. He's asked them to shelve that plan. He's asked them to await government response to all their pleas. He has listened to them, so there's no need for strike. Young people out there should listen to the president and allow the president more time to see to the realization of all the goodies he has for them.
Despite pleas, persuasion, warnings, and subtle threats from state and non-state actors, the organizers of the planned protests have remained resolute declaring that they will occupy Nigeria as scheduled. Omoyele Sowore is one of the organizers who is the convener of the Revolution Now movement and a former presidential candidate. He says protests are non-negotiable.
What is paramount is that everybody has agreed that there was a protest. So whether you're protesting for or against, this is the real deal. But it is my understanding that the fake ones will fizzle out and the real protests will commence solidly on August 1st.
Sowore says Nigerians are determined to end bad governance and called on the youths to resist oppression, corruption, mismanagement, and incompetence.
I want to say to them that this is not just a protest, it's a revolt against a system that has pulverized them and has destroyed their self-esteem and dignity. But most importantly, they should also understand that it's a historical duty. And so this is a torch-passing ceremony for the Nigerian youth.
The planned protest, backed by several groups, is scheduled to take place in 35 states and the capital, Abuja. Organizers of the protests have several demands, including fuel price reductions, the release of end SARS detainees, and for the government to address insecurity and hunger. Adora Sydney Jack is the executive director, Gender Strategy Advancement International. She says proper dialogue can halt the protests.
I do not think that, you know, two wrongs make a right. However, I also believe that there is a need for engagement. Nigerians have said we want to engage through protest. It is now based and, well, at the president's feet to decide what he will do with his conversation and his engagement going forward. Will he engage Nigerian young people frontally? That's for him to decide.
Nigeria is suffering its worst cost of living crisis in a generation following reforms brought in by President Bola Tinubu's government after coming into power in May last year. The government removed a popular fuel subsidy to invest savings in infrastructure development. Economists say the reforms are aimed at making Nigeria more self-reliant and its economy more efficient. For VOA News from Abuja, Nigeria.
Officials in Chad say urgent international help is needed to save more than 2 million people caught in a severe humanitarian crisis caused by conflicts and climate shocks. Chad is among the poorest nation in the world, but is home to more than a million displaced people, including 600,000 refugees from neighboring Sudan and the Central African Republic, according to the United Nations. Mokirwin Kinzeka reports from Cameroon.
The Central African nation of Chad, now experiencing its fifth consecutive year of severe food insecurity, launched a call Monday for a national emergency response program to help millions of vulnerable people. Officials say food is particularly scarce now as hunger peaks in the June to August lean season between harvests. Abdelmajid Abderrahim is Chad's Minister of Public Health. He says he is pleading with all international partners to help Chad out of a severe humanitarian crisis affecting over 2 million civilians in the country of about 18 million people. Abderrahim says ceaseless floods and influx of refugees, increasing numbers of displaced persons and armed conflicts between communities are inflicting suffering on civilians. Chad's government alone, despite its strong will and commitment, cannot meet the growing needs of suffering people alone. Abderrahim, speaking on Chad State TV on Monday, described the food insecurity and humanitarian crisis as unprecedented. He said the crises are exacerbated by insufficient agricultural production due to climate change, drought, and an influx of destructive migratory birds and crickets. Chad hosts over 600,000 refugees displaced from conflict-ridden Sudan, and the numbers and humanitarian needs are growing. Chad is also home to tens of thousands of civilians fleeing fighting between rebels and government troops in the Central African Republic. Several hundred thousand civilians displaced in Chad by Boko Haram terrorism are also in urgent need of humanitarian assistance. Added to that are the millions of people affected by floods and drought that hit Chad hard over the past year. Last week, the World Bank said Chad was requesting assistance to save 7 million lives threatened by hunger and malnutrition. Rassist Pertev is the representative of the World Bank in Chad.
Chad has seized the Banque Mondiale for an inactivation.
Pertev says the World Bank is contributing $60 million to help Chad's government cope with the food emergency the Central African State declared all over its territory. He says he hopes the contribution from the World Bank will help Chad to immediately respond to the crisis and save lives. The World Bank says it will mobilize an additional $100 million to assist a government response plan. Last week, the World Food Programme, the World Bank, the European Commission, Japan, and the United States said they are also contributing to help Chad by distributing food, seeds, and sharing cash transfers to families most exposed to hunger. Foreign donors did not say how much they will be giving to assist Chad in the emergency response plan. The plan also envisages the provision of nutritional supplements for children under 2, pregnant women, and breastfeeding mothers who the UN says are most impacted by hunger and malnutrition. The World Food Programme says to reduce the increasingly severe and recurrent crisis, substantial investments in agriculture and support to reduce climate shocks should be intensified. The World Bank reports that poverty and vulnerability are pervasive in Chad, with over 42% of the population living below the national poverty line. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The Washington Mandela Fellowship Summit, or YALI, Young African Leaders Initiative Summit, is a 3-day event in downtown Washington, D.C. The program is hosting over 700 young African leaders from sub-Saharan Africa. VOA's Anthony Dabruto spoke to VOA's Carol Van Dam for a look into today's proceedings.
Today, throughout the morning, the YALI Fellows will be participating in a bunch of different panels hosted by various U.S. government officials. You know, I've heard from Molly Fee, the Assistant Secretary at the Bureau for African Affairs for USAID, the Global AIDS Coordinator, John Nkengasong for the U.S. Department of State, various leaders coming out and energizing this group of 700 young African leaders. Unlike yesterday, which was the pomp, the circumstance, the warm welcome by U.N. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, today, the U.S. government is asking the question, really, how can we help you? These young African leaders have come from six-week programs all throughout the country, from various colleges, universities. But now, as they're heading back to Africa, there's that long-term commitment to success that the U.S. is really looking to build on. How can the 5,000 alumni of the program help this year's group?
Tell me how long this training went on and what kinds of things did they learn or go through when they were here?
It's a six-week program, so the YALIs are selected from their various home country embassies, and they are then paired with a college or university anywhere in the United States. And then they are selected, and then by how their passions align with college or university, they then go study, I believe do some sort of fellowship or community service project with them while they're out there. And then as they're wrapping up the six-week program, they then come to Washington for kind of the final couple of days. They're energized. They kind of have a little graduation and everything. So a couple that I've heard from, actually, there was one that worked with Madonna, actually. And he was developing a way for an online program to help dancers and athletes recover and even talk about therapy.
Oh, that's interesting. Did you get a chance to speak to any other individuals that are in the program? You have YALI leaders, and what did they have to say about what they're going to bring back to their home country?
I haven't got a chance to speak to a ton today, but I just finished up my interview with the lead Yali coordinator for the U.S. State Department, Terrence Favors, and he really told me that it's actually the 10th anniversary of this program, and that the program this year specifically, they're really leaning into that 5,000-strong alumni network. And so they brought back specifically the 2023 Impact Award winner. That's kind of the their version of the Community Service Award. Is coming back this year, really detailing kind of some of the successes that were coming out of the program, you know, as she saw it, you know, as one of the biggest stars of last year, you know, what she would have done differently. You know, how can these programs better assist in kind of little things, make Yali members' passions a reality? The summit isn't really bringing much, I would say, much in the way of celebrations, but that's okay. From what I'm hearing from a lot of the Yalis, you know, they aren't expecting this, you know, grand celebration. You know, they're here to work, make connections, impact lives. And I think by bringing in these alumni to help with these more kind of tailored and even personal questions, you know, they're achieving that much goal, in my opinion, that much more effectively.
With President Joe Biden withdrawing from re-election, Republican nominee Donald Trump is shifting focus to his likely opponent, Vice President Kamala Harris. VOA immigration reporter Alian Barros says Trump's Republican Party is attacking Harris's work on immigration issues, calling her a border czar.
Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has switched his focus to Vice President Kamala Harris, his likely opponent in the race for presidency, criticizing her record on immigration.
She wants everybody to have amnesty. Then Joe Biden made her the border czar, and that's when it really got bad. She launched a colossal illegal alien invasion of a country. She said, come on in, remember?
Illegal immigration is a leading issue among Republican voters, and the Trump campaign tries to link Harris to Biden immigration policy by calling her his border czar. Theresa Cardinal Brown is the senior advisor on immigration and border policy at the Bipartisan Policy Center.
She was never named a border czar. In fact, the border was not her issue priority at all.
Early in the Biden administration, Harris was assigned the task of reducing migration to the U.S. southern border in collaboration with Central American nations of Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. Here's Brown again.
She was in charge of developing a strategy and gaining commitments for development assistance and investment into those three countries of the Northern Triangle to help reduce the so-called push factors for migration.
After Biden asked Harris to spearhead a strategy to help improve living conditions and discourage migrants from leaving their home, Harris's immigration message became stricter.
I want to be clear to folks in this region who are thinking about making that dangerous trek to the United States-Mexico border. Do not come. Do not come.
Trump says Harris's record shows she is ultra-liberal on immigration.
Kamala voted in favor of deadly sanctuary cities. She supports decriminalizing illegal border crossings, and she supports mass amnesty for all illegals. Think of that.
House Republicans last week passed a resolution condemning the Biden administration and its, quote, border czar Kamala Harris for failing to secure the border. Leading House Democrat Hakeem Jeffries says Republicans are lying about Harris because they have no plan to address challenges at the border.
And the vice president was not a border czar. They are making that up because they have no affirmative agenda, vision, or track record for the American people.
Immigration lawyer Hector Quiroga says that immigration reform is needed no matter who is elected president.
We have over 3 million cases stuck in courts. There's not enough immigration judges. We've been saying that for a long time.
The Biden administration says it's making progress at the border, reporting that arrests for illegal crossings from Mexico in June were the lowest of any month during Biden's presidency. Aline Barros, VOA News, Washington.
Time now for our sports segment. And in our sports segment, we have Mokbilia Baro, our VOA sports analyst and host of our Olympics podcast, Chasing Gold, here in the studio. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yehias.
So in Olympic soccer, there are four African teams on the men's side and two on the women's side. Can you tell us how they are doing?
Absolutely. So if we're going to start off with the guys, we have Guinea, Morocco, Egypt, and Mali, all respectively in different groups. At the moment, it seems as though there's a game currently being played right now where Morocco is leading 3-0 against Iraq in their group. They already have one win. So if they get a second win, they will be in good contention for coming out of that group with 6 points. You have also Egypt, who at the moment is playing or who just played Spain, and they beat Spain 2-1, making them the number one team in Group C. So they are coming out of that group with 7. Spain didn't need to win that game, so they ended up finishing in second. And then we have Mali, who has one game left with potential, but it's a very difficult pathway as Japan has already clinched their way through the other side. Japan has 6 points. Paraguay is in second with 3. Mali only has 1 point, and they are tied with Israel in that group. So even with a win with 4 points, it really depends on what Paraguay does in their next game. Now, for the women's team, we had 2 African teams that were in the competition, Zambia and Nigeria. Unfortunately for them both, they both were unable to get either a win or a draw in both of their first 2 games. With 1 game left, they are very far behind in their groups and most likely will not make it out of their respective groups B and C. But we spoke about this on the podcast earlier with Mike, and it's still very interesting. And really, it's a level by which you have to respect African teams for getting to this platform, right? Being able to play and participate in the Olympics. You go and you redraw, make sure you fix the issues that were at hand, and come back with multiple different, there's different tournaments. You have the World Cup that's coming up. You have another AFCON that'll be coming up before the next Olympics. Mm-hmm. So they'll be sure to be better next time.
And Mokbila, basketball, one of the biggest stories has been South Sudan in Olympics men's basketball. They play against the U.S. tomorrow. What are their expectations?
Yes, if we're looking at it, South Sudan has been the talk of the town, not only for South Sudan, because we have seen clips on individuals in South Sudan, in Juba, watching these watch parties, amassing hundreds of people, you know, mm-hmm. blowing it up on jumbotrons and making sure that, you know, this is something positive that the South Sudanese people have been able to watch. But beyond that, similarly how all of Africa got behind Morocco when they did so well in the World Cup, we have the same sentiments of Africans and just really, a lot of people, even just everyone's watching it and are excited to see this South Sudanese team succeed. They lost by 1 point in the exhibition game against the U.S. They won their opening game against Puerto Rico in great fashion. So they are going to go up against the big boys and see what they have. But they know the type of energy that they have to put into that game, because at one point they were up, it's 14 points at half. So if they can recreate something like that, we will see what the bright stars can do.
Another bright star is Simone Biles, arguably one of the greatest U.S. Olympic gymnastics of all time, chasing gold. How is she doing?
Simone Biles at the moment, after her first competition, has endured a calf injury that she is trying to, you know, combat through. Like you just mentioned, arguably one of the greatest Olympians of all time, just from what she's been able to do. I think she'll do great. She's competing today, I believe, for this U.S. women's gymnastics team. And when they clean up house and get that gold, that'll now push the U.S. through for their medal count. So they are excited and they are waiting for Simone to do what Simone does.
Mokbila Baro, our VOA sports analyst and host of our Olympics podcast, Chasing Gold. Thank you for your input.
Thanks for having me.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Audrius Regas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.